Hey, this is Chavo Guerrero Jr., and you are listening to yet another wrestling podcast. Viva la Rasta!
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at
the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
They got the answers. I changed the question.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
These are the best in the world, brother. These are the best at what they do.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
Another wrestling podcast.
Another wrestling podcast. Now can you dig that, sucker?
Welcome, everybody, to another wrestling podcast. This is episode number 81. I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
And I'm Steve Credo.
Now, Steve, it is November. It is, you know, it's close to the holiday season.
Yes, it is.
And so today I decided that, you know, what we should do is talk about something that you've wanted to talk about for it's an early holiday gift.
Bret Hart Appreciation Night.
Sort of. He's definitely involved in this. This week, actually marks the 18th anniversary of the now infamous Montreal Screwjob. I'm sure you're aware of the Montreal Screwjob, right?
I thought it was the day we shall not name.
Well, that's what you decided on, but I decided on to open an old wound. And but, you know, listen, at least we get to kind of clear the air. We can talk about this. We can hash it out. You know, tit for tat. We can go back and forth, and maybe we can find some common ground here.
All right, I don't mind. I think I can do this. This will be great. I think it's. Yeah. I think I'm ready to vent about this, and I think the people will finally hear the hitman side from Credo. I think we're ready.
Well, actually, I thought that since everybody knows how much you like Bret Hart,
yeah, he's my favorite wrestler of all time. The best.
Yeah, well,
there is. The best.
Who
there
better
was.
To take his side in all this than me? So.
Wait. Whoa.
Yeah.
What do you mean you?
Yeah.
What are you
going
to do?
Well, Jonathan the Hitman Hart is going to defend Bret and the Heartbreak Credo, you. You're going to be defending Shawn Michaels. So, yeah, I think that this is great. And I think that you're going to, you know, save some money on therapy this month because you can kind of get some of this out. But
This is becoming the AWP screw job. This is happening right now. Bret Hart's he's my wrestler. I should be defending him. I should be talking about him right now.
You talk about him enough, so I figured.
This is where Jonathan screwed Credo.
Hey, Jonathan didn't screw Credo. Credo screwed Credo. Everybody knows that. But this may help with things as well. Joining us on the show today is another gentleman who's from a famous wrestling family. None other than Chavo Guerrero Jr. is going to be joining us in the studio today. So if, you know, maybe we can talk to him a little bit about the Montreal Screwjob too. Who knows?
Well, if you didn't get anything out of the intro, you're definitely going to get something out of Chavo. So that's great. We have another great guest, Jonathan. We no matter what happens, we keep getting the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. But not yet. But we're still getting Chavo. We're getting the best, you know, some of the best names in the show.
Yeah. It's very important to us that we go out there and try to, you know, we talk to independent wrestlers, we talk to managers, we talk to behind the scenes people, we talk to actors, porn stars. We've done it all here at Another Wrestling Podcast. So
and then some.
And then some. So today we will be talking with Mr. Chavo Guerrero. But guys, if you're listening to us right now, which obviously you are, and you're hearing this, you know, there's a couple things you can do to help keep the show going. Obviously, you know, stay active with us on social media, and the best way to do that is to go on our site, anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. You can find out where we're going to be. As a matter of fact, Steve, we will be Another Wrestling Podcast this Friday. Where will we be?
Yeah, we are going on the road to Waterbury, Connecticut, Jonathan, for the 20th anniversary of Northeast Wrestling, happening in our back of the porch.
Neck of the woods.
Yeah. I don't really know any sayings, but yeah. So we're going to head on over there. We'd like to, you know, visit as many local independent shows as we can get to, at least within our spare time. But hey, 20 years of Northeast Wrestling. I'll see you there, Jonathan.
Well, and the good thing is you'll have all this out because Bret the Hitman Hart will actually be at that show.
Finally.
So we can maybe talk to him about what his thoughts are on your man crush. So, you know, we eased in there. We started to talk about it a little bit. Everybody knows the story about the Montreal screw job. So, 18 years, almost 20 wow. years, and we're still talking about it.
It's crazy.
So, it was that monumental in the world of professional wrestling history. The backstory is WCW and WWE were going back and forth. It was the Monday Night Wars. And it was known that Bret wanted to kind of maybe get a little more money or renew his contract, or but Vince literally came out and said, "Hey, I can't pay you that money." And so Bret started to talk with WCW, and Bret did not. He was the WWF champion at that time. Bret, depending on who you talk to, didn't want to passed the belt to Shawn Michaels because of some altercations they'd had in the past. And so prior to that night, Shawn Michaels and Triple H and HBK, depending on who you talk to, decided that they were going to make Bret lose the belt. And the rest is pretty much history. So
yeah,
I think that to get this going the right way, I want you, the Heartbreak Credo, to kind of talk about why you think that Shawn Michaels winning the title at the 1997 Survivor Series in Montreal was, not to be corny, best for business.
Man, this is really going to hurt inside, but I'll see what I can do. Well, I get it. You know, I think putting Shawn Michaels in this position, you know, is putting me, Shawn Michaels, the HB Credo, in this situation. You know, I don't know. It's a hard one because it's, you know, you're going in there, you know, being told this is the situation, and that, you know, this is the outcome that we want, and, you know, going into the match with Bret, you know, they talked it over. They had probably a finish that they had in mind, or what they were gonna do. And Shawn Michaels had the man. This is really hard for me, Jonathan. This is really hard for me. But I get it. You know, he was damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of scenario, to where, you know, Vince and, you know, everybody else in the back went up to him and told him, "Hey, this is what could happen. You need to win. You need to pull this up. You know, yada yada yada." I'm not gonna set up the whole match, but you know what happens. And it's crazy because if Michaels didn't do it, then what happens to him? You know, does he get punished if he didn't do this and they actually let Bret win that night? What would have happened to his career? Could that have been like a career ending match for Shawn Michaels if he didn't do what they wanted? You know what I mean? So it's like the mob, man. You either make the hit or you don't, and if you don't, you better make that hit sooner. You know what I mean? Your job's on the line. So I feel bad for Shawn Michaels to where, whatever happens, you know, it's like you're being told to do something, and in the business of this kind of business, at least, you're supposed to do it. You know, it's not a real fight. You're not, you know, selling punch. You know, you're not in like a boxing ring to where you're gonna throw the fight to where you really know what's going on. But then to have like this shady finish on pay-per-view on national TV, it's a big deal, and I don't know, man. It was a loss of innocence that night. You know, this is like the most real I saw wrestling in probably, you know what I mean? Like, when? Like, since, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, when you look at wrestling as a kid, you view it and you're like, it's real. But when you grow up, you become a little smart and, you know what's going on in the business. But when this happened, man, it was totally like, you know, they pulled the curtain away. You saw Oz in the back was not like this big mystical guy. You know, it was crazy. I have a lot of emotions running through this, Jonathan. But all in all, Shawn Michaels, you know, it's the damned if you do scenario and damned if you don't. Because like I said, if you just rewrite history and Bret wins, what happens to Michaels' career? You know, and that's, I think, the biggest point.
Well, you know, I love being here on another wrestling podcast. And, you know,
that was the worst Bret Hart impersonation.
Bret Hart, ladies and gentlemen. He was just here. He had to go, though. So,
worst.
You know, listen, Bret Hart, I feel for in certain instances throughout all this, because as the Monday Night Wars happened and it started to take its toll on both sides, Bret Hart was the most loyal person in the WWE. I mean, Shawn Michaels didn't go. Obviously, Undertaker didn't go. But, I mean, they were really – when you look at Bret Hart, prior to that moment, he hadn't been in WCW. You know, Mean Mark Callis had been in WCW. Stunning Steve Austin had been in WCW. But Bret Hart had never been in WCW. He was always kind of the WWF flag bearer at that time. And I remember seeing him, you know, and he was the I would liken him to John Cena today. Like, you know, everybody who knows about WWE today knows about John Cena. And back then in the 90s, everybody knew about Bret Hart. And, you know, he was going into this. There was obviously a lot of emotion. There was probably a lot of miscommunication between a lot of different people. You know, do I think that Bret shouldn't have, you know, worked something out? I think he should have, but the fact that it was in his hometown, I don't think that that really has a bearing on it. I read somewhere, I mean, obviously wrestlers and everybody have their opinions about this. This is one of the most polarizing arguments in the entire history of professional wrestling. But some people said, you know, like, listen, it's your hometown. I get it. But, you know, like after they announce you and say, you know, like Bret Hart, no one, the only reason people remember it as the Montreal Screwjob is because we keep saying it's the Montreal Screwjob. Like, you know, it could have happened in Poughkeepsie and, you know, it wouldn't have, it would, you know what I mean? So, it came about and I don't think that Bret really got treated the way he should have. But I also don't think that he should have both parties are at fault is basically what I'm saying. But before, you know, I do have respect for Bret Hart, and I do think that he had tough decisions to make that night, just like everybody else. But obviously, what happened after the match has now become even more infamous. And, you know, were you watching that live on pay-per-view?
Yeah, man, I was watching it live, and, you know, I think at this point, too, it wasn't like it is today with the internet. You're reading, like, you know, what's happening, whatever. You watch the show, you watch the show. You enjoyed it, you know what I mean? You didn't tweet it, you didn't Facebook it. You put the show on, and, you know, if anything, you called your friends after and talked about it, or saw them the next day in school and talked about it. So, you know, like, it was, you watched it. I kind of knew, like, back then, I think when I was watching this, the Dirt Sheets, if you will, was, like, literally a website. You know, it was, like, one thing or an email being sent out. It wasn't as crazy as it is today. And, you know, I remember hearing something that, you know, I saw some talk that Bret might be leaving. You know, a bunch of people were talking about it, this and that. But it wasn't as, you know, like if you're looking on Twitter today, but it was like you saw like a little headline somewhere, you read it, and then that was it. And, you know, so there was something behind this match, and you just didn't know what was going to happen. So it was definitely, it was an epic night of just for the reality that came out at the end to where it was amazing, man. Like I said, it was like that loss of innocence. But, we talked your ear off, guys. We had a little bit of Bret Hart, a little bit of Shawn Michaels, or should I say HB Credo and Jonathan the Hitman Benjamin. You know, we talked, guys, but we want to hear from you, too. Let us know your thoughts on the screw job. You know, head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. You'll find our Facebook, Twitter links. Comment, tweet us, Facebook us. Let us know your thoughts. Jonathan, we're going to take a little bit of a break from this as much as I think we should. I have to calm my emotions a little bit about this this whole event.
Yeah, you're struggling with this a little bit.
Flustered. Hashtag flustered. But Jonathan, we do have a legend coming in right now. Chavo Guerrero Jr. joins us right now in the AWP studios.
Ooh, Chavo. Chavo, todo.
All right, if you listen long enough to our guest today, you'll actually hear his resume get longer. He's a wrestler, an actor, businessman, producer, comic book star, talk show host. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Chavo Guerrero Jr. Chavo, thanks so much for taking time out of your no doubt busy schedule to sit down and talk with us. How are you doing today?
Hey, man, I'm doing really good, man. Thanks. I'm actually just getting done with the gym, walking out. So if you hear some weights clanking, you'll know exactly what that is.
Great. Now, Chavo, you know, we follow you on Instagram, at Chavo Guerrero Jr., and we see that something big is happening on November 16th. Can you give us some hints, maybe, as to what's happening on that day?
Yeah, man. So on November 16th, me and Rey Mysterio are launching a clothing line called VLR Clothing, Viva La Raza Clothing. And basically, it's just we're launching a really, really nice, just a cool brand is basically what we're launching, you know. What's out there for the Latinos a lot of times, and it's a brand that appeals to everybody, but anything that's got like, sometimes that Latino backs behind it, you know, that culture behind it, sometimes it's gang or skulls or that kind of stuff. And there's really nothing really just nice, like a great brand, like a Quicksilver or a Luca or something like that. And that's what we're launching. And we're taking off the model of like FUBU, which was like for us, by us. Mm-hmm. And it was by, you know, Damon and like an urban culture. Well, basically, that's basically what we're doing with VLR. And it's made really by me and Ray. And it's for Latinos, by Latinos, man.
Awesome.
And and like I said, it appeals to everybody. It's just a really cool looking brand.
Awesome. Now, we can't have Chavo Guerrero Jr. on here and not talk Lucha Underground. If you're not familiar with it, it's an amazing hybrid of wrestling and entertainment. Season one just finished. Do you have any favorite moments from that season that you can tell us?
Yeah, for me, it was becoming the new chairman a la La Parca from WCW, the chairman of Lucha Underground and hitting everybody, man. That was great. And we really showed the tone of that show. You remember, this was our first season, and we really didn't know where we were going to go with it and kind of like how good it was going to be. I saw the potential, but I really didn't know how it was going to be. And then after that second episode where I just smacked Sexy Star with a chair, everybody was like, what the heck? You can't do that. I mean, even Vince Russo, if you remember Vince Russo, he was like, oh, my God, that's when I knew that this was different. Right then and there, because I was trying to do that in WCW, and they wouldn't allow me to do anything with the girls. We couldn't even touch them. He goes, when you hit Sexy Style in the chair, he goes, the world, wrestling world changed. I started laughing. Wow, I didn't see it that big, but, hey, it's coming to his mouth. I was like, all right, great.
Now, obviously, it had a pretty good following, Lucha Underground. A lot of people, a lot of eyes on it and talking about it. So, Is season two a for sure thing? Is it going to happen?
Yeah, we start taping on Saturday, actually, the 15th.
So
it's a go. It's 100%. And the only reason it took so long is that people didn't realize that this was going to take off the way it did. So right away, when it did, I mean, El Rey ordered 40 episodes right away. But we have a very high production value, as you can see, and we were really just trying to keep it. We couldn't come back in the second season and have it not be as good as the first. It had to be a great sequel, like a la Terminator 2, as opposed to the first Terminator, which is a great movie. But you couldn't come back with a junky Terminator. It had to be even better, and that's, you know, when they just really, you know, they came alive with that one, you know. And that's what we had to be. We have to have a great stellar season, because now eyes are watching us. And before, people didn't know what to expect. Now they all know what to expect.
Definitely.
Well, It's a great show, and you know the El Rey Network, like you mentioned. But I think that you've got an amazing group that's on there right now. But in season two, do you think that we'll see any new additions, maybe to the roster?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a bunch of surprises in store, and you know, like anything in wrestling, things change all the time. Constantly, people getting hurt, people getting added. You know, contracts are signing, all different stuff, and this is really no different. And we just had some really good surprises, and I can't hint yet, but it's going to be a really big season.
Awesome, awesome.
Now, Chavo, you know, were you surprised by the outpouring of positivity towards Lucha Underground? Because, you know, coming into the world of pro wrestling as a new company, as a new brand, you know, nobody ever knows what to expect. But, I mean, the fans out there just love it.
You know what? I wasn't surprised at all. When I saw the product, it was great. That's after the first, usually in wrestling, the production's trying to catch up with the wrestlers because wrestlers are really, really good. It was opposite here. The production was so good. After I saw the first episode, I went pulled the wrestlers aside. Said, guys, we really need to step up our game. You know, so I wasn't surprised at all because I just knew how good it was. And wrestling fans, it's not hard. People make it rocket science, but it's not. All you have to do is treat the wrestling fan with respect and give them a good product. Don't insult their intelligence, and that's what wrestling does a lot of times. Wrestling will say, "Oh, we're just gonna." We got some writers in here that don't really know wrestling. They're just Hollywood writers, so they just start writing. And we, as wrestlers, are constantly going, no, that can't work. Because, look, I hit Rey Mysterio with a chair and broke his leg 6 months ago. Oh, no one will remember that. I don't know. Yes, they will. Yeah. The wrestling fans, they're so diehard, and you can't treat them like that. So in Lucha, when I saw that we were not treating them like that, we were making everything make sense and really putting out a great product that I knew was going to be a hit. And if you read the comments after the first episode, people are like, I like it, just different. I'm not sure yet. By the third episode, everybody was on board. Everybody was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. Just the production value and them, it's like a movie, basically. They're watching wrestling in a movie.
Well, you mentioned how different Lucha Underground is with professional wrestling in general, but you also do something different in the fact that you guys have almost seasons of wrestling. This kind of helps people to be able to have a break and, you know, pursue a lot of other things like what you're doing right now. Do you like that idea of having seasons? Do you think that should be implemented kind of across the board?
Well, I like the idea, first of all, because it was different. Second of all, it's very hard to write for 52 weeks a year, year in and year out. It's very hard. And if you see, you know, on WWE, they're really having a hard time stealing 3 hours on a Monday night and having it really good for every year, you know, week in and week out. Now, there are weeks that you know, hey, great shows, but there's a lot of weeks that you don't even get to see the first action until 25 minutes in. Mm-hmm. You know, that's difficult. So I'm all about having seasons and, you know, giving a break and having a TV show, which a lot of times wrestling is like, I'll keep saying WWE just because that's the Coca-Cola of wrestling. They are, they pretend they're a TV show, but really it's a live event show is what they are. That TV show really just sells their live event and the pay-per-views and their network. That's what that TV show is supposed to be. And instead of trying to upsell to you or to the live, come watch our live event. Well, we don't have live events. We don't have pay-per-views. We don't have a network. A wrestling network. So basically, we're just going, just watch next week, and we're actually treating it like a TV show with a cliffhanger at the end, a season finale, and coming back, you know, with the first bang episode of the season, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, not only are you wrestling for Lucha Underground, but you're also a producer. Do you enjoy that side of the business, and how do you balance producing and wrestling?
Yeah, you know, I really, really enjoy it, and just being around wrestling, wrestling being in our family for 75 years, and not just that, you know, me being at WCW and WWE and TNA, that we've just learned. I've learned so much being around it, and really, WWE was my college. That was like going to Harvard of wrestling, you know, and really just watching how these things were done and participating, and now being able to actually put to use all this stuff that I've learned, man, it's awesome. It's great. And what's cool is that I'm teaching some of these Lucha Underground guys that have never really done wrestling, I'm teaching them a little bit of wrestling. Well, they're teaching me a huge bit of TV production. You know, I'm in the control room and helping directing and camera work and you name it, basically.
Now, we mentioned earlier that you've got your own show. You're a talk show host as well. Can you tell people that haven't heard about this, about the Chavo Guerrero show?
Yeah, you know what? That's a show that's on Geek Nation, and hopefully we'll be filming some new episodes here pretty soon. But basically, it's just me. It's just like a man show. It's just a fun show. It's not me interviewing and asking, like, for instance, Rampage Jackson was on the show, and it's not me asking him, the MMA fighter, you know. And it's not me asking him, hey, when did you start your MMA career? You know, hey, how did you start training? Because he's told that story, you know, 100 times. Basically, it's me asking, hey, when's the first time you got your butt kicked, you know, in school? What's the first car that you, you know, lost your, you know, you had sex in? That kind of stuff. That's basically, we're actually just, talking and just having fun and just having fun with it, you know what I mean? And more like two or three guys just, like, you know, sitting around and having beers, basically. And we actually have beers on set, so it's cool. We got a bartender and everything. It's pretty cool.
That's great. All right, don't change that channel. Well, seriously, don't, because we're going to have a lot more with Chavo Guerrero Jr. in a little bit. And guys and gals, if you're listening to the show, make sure you head on over to YouTube and subscribe on YouTube as well, because all the interviews you hear on here, plus YouTube exclusives and us on video at live events and conventions and all that fun stuff, you can find at youtube.com/anotherwrestlingpod. That's youtube.com/anotherwrestlingpod. So subscribe to us.
Hey guys, what's up?
Who is this?
This is Jay Oletto from PWPNation.com, the owner and founder of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse.
Jay, man, well, a little bit of outside interference, but welcome to another wrestling podcast.
Thank you so much. Great working with you guys.
Yeah, so Jay, we have you here. You know, let's talk a little bit about something that's happening now. No more Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins was injured just the other day. What are your thoughts on, no more Seth Rollins? The workhorse right now of WWE is gone for up to almost 9 months now, it could be.
Yeah, it's devastating. You know, he was getting the push of his career. He may never get a push like this again. That's just the reality of the business. However, my hope is that he goes on to have an even better push when he returns, hopefully as a babyface. A lot of fans out there aren't too familiar with the way the knee works. As a sports fan as well as a wrestling fan, he has a completely blown out knee. So the 9 month time span on this seems to be pretty modest in my opinion. It could be more like a year depending on how hard he goes, but a completely devastating blow to WWE and also to Seth Rollins himself.
Now, Jay, do you think that what they're doing with the title now, this kind of setting up this whole tournament that we're finding out about on Raw, do you think that this is the best way that they should go, or do you think that they should have done something different?
Yeah, they had to call an audible, and this is a way to get some wrestlers involved in the world title picture without putting them into it permanently. You know what I mean? So with the way the brackets look, it seems pretty obvious that we're going to have a semifinals and finals at Survivor Series, which is fine. It looks like Del Rio versus Reigns will be the semifinal on one side and Ambrose versus Owens on the other. But I think it's the way to go. They could have went the route of just doing crowning the new champion on Raw by doing a battle royal like they did back in, I believe it was 2006, when Batista went down to injury and Kurt Angle won in a battle royal on SmackDown. But going a tournament is the way to go. I think overall the fans are pretty happy about it.
Sure. Now, Jay, before this all happened, Roman Reigns was the number one contender set to face Rollins at Survivor Series. Now, you know, those plans have changed, obviously, with the whole tournament. But do you think the Roman Reigns, is that too predictable for us kind of fans right now for him to win it? Considering, you know, he was just the number one contender, do they have to do this whole series just for him to win it? Or is it just the, you know, is it an obvious choice of what we need right now?
I think it's 50-50, guys. I really do, between Reigns and Ambrose at this point. I mean, it looks like tonight, it looks like on Raw, Triple H was kind of setting up Roman Reigns for this big run to the finals of the tournament, which is the way they had to go. He's been set up, like you said. But to have Ambrose in a situation where he can foil the entire plan for Roman Reigns, having Roman Reigns in a situation where he can foil the plan for Dean Ambrose, I think that it's very unpredictable. What do you guys think? I mean, where does Dean Ambrose fall into this equation?
I think that if Dean Ambrose doesn't do something big within, you know, the next couple months, whether that be win this tournament or win the Rumble or something like that, then he's going to get lost in the shuffle. And it's a shame, because when everybody asked me at the beginning of the Shield who was going to be the first person to win, you know, world championship, I said Ambrose. And a lot of people said Reigns, and a lot of people were surprised, I would say, whenever Rollins ended up doing that. But I'm a little nervous for Ambrose right now if something big doesn't happen to him soon.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing that could happen right now is he needs some kind of character change, whether he go heel or just, I don't know, change up something a little bit to where, for me, you put the strap on him, you put the championship on him, and you're not going to see him on the Today Show representing the company, you know what I mean? To where I don't think he has that, you know, character to be the world champion, especially as long as how Seth Rollins was, unless they use him as like a kind of a quick transitional champion. But that would suck for him and his career. But poor guy. I don't know. And Roman Reigns, man, I mean, they pretty much teed him up for the past year and a half. So I don't know. I think this is going to be his time to shine. We'll see what he could do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, Ambrose has that Mick Foley appeal to me, where he can get the sympathy from the crowd if he somehow gets screwed over at Survivor Series in some way, shape, or form. Either, you know, to the knowledge of Roman Reigns or not, maybe Triple H really does want Roman Reigns to be the champion, and he just does it on his own to still entice Reigns to join the Authority. So I think there's a lot of variables that go into it, but if anything, I think they should give Ambrose as much sympathy as possible, because even though he has lost a lot of key matches in his last year and a half run against Rollins, I still don't think he's got the sympathy that he can have, which will lead to a much bigger win in the future.
Now, Jay, obviously Survivor Series, it's a big pay-per-view, or I should say it was a big pay-per-view. Always used to be one of the big four: SummerSlam, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series. But now, do you feel that Survivor Series is almost a secondary pay-per-view, like a Fastlane or a Payback or whatever? Because there's not as much emphasis. They almost gave away. They were going to do a 5-on-5. I mean, they did it on Raw like 2 weeks ago. They did a traditional Survivor Series match on Raw right before Survivor Series. Do you think that it's lost its appeal, or do you think that it could make a comeback the way that it used to be?
Unfortunately, it's lost its appeal, and that's just the reality of it. It seems like the entire creative team or the higher-ups within WWE took their focus off of Survivor Series back in, you know, the early 2000s, mid-2000s, and kind of were using it just as a catapult into WrestleMania season instead of actually doing what it represented in the 90s and building off of feuds and continuing feuds and making things happen in an exciting way. Last year was pretty exciting with Sting's first appearance inside a WWE ring. So they did give us a big moment last year, but I feel like it needs a series, no pun intended, but a series of big moments in the future, in future years, to bring back the legitimacy of the pay-per-view.
All right, well, Jay Leto, man, I appreciate you stopping by from PWPNation.com. Jay, we talked a little bit with you, but we hope to talk with you more in the future. But thanks for stopping by and creating some outside interference for us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it.
Now, Steve, we definitely got into it. We talked a little bit. We did some role reversal. I think what's important is that there's this dialogue. You know, you're a diehard Bret fan. Out of the two, I'm a diehard Shawn Michaels fan, but, you know, we can have some common ground here. We can, you know, make these sort of conversations and everybody comes away a winner. But I think what's important now is to talk about some of the long-term effects from the Montreal Screwjob. What do you think changed the day or even the night after the Montreal Screwjob happened? What are some of the most important things to come from the Montreal Screwjob?
I think first off, the biggest factor would be the importance of respect, not just for one another in the ring, but for your company, your bosses, you know, the tradition of pro wrestling. And, you know, seeing both sides of the story, hearing it all, you know, all this and that, to where I see everybody's point of view. I understand that everybody's, you know, what they thought would have happened if he didn't do this, why he didn't do that, and he did this, you know, and yada, yada, yada. To where I think the biggest thing coming out of it is just, you know, to be respectful of the business so that doesn't happen again. I mean, no matter who you are, what wrestler you are, just being able to show that respect to, you know, the elders, or, you know what I mean? To when you're an elder, you show the respect to the younger guy coming in, and vice versa, to where, you know, as one guy leaves, you do the right thing, you know, you lose. You pass the torch, or, you know, whatever it is, the tradition, as far as, like, even championships, if I'm going to somewhere else, do the right thing and, you know, either lose to the guy, or, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to give you the ending to every match, but, like, do something that, you know, keep it traditional, keep the tradition going. It's out of respect, so you know what I mean? To where, once again, I don't mean to put it down like this, but it isn't real in the sense that, you know, Shawn Michaels won, but he didn't really win, you know what I mean? To where we get that, but, you know, you just, it's like respecting the craft, respecting the art. And like I said, you know, anything can happen to where one side, you know, doesn't like this, doesn't like that, but that at the end of the day, it's that common ground, like you said, to where, okay, you know, I'm leaving, Jonathan. I'm going to another wrestling podcast. You know, the rightful thing. What I, you know, like you have a passing of a thing, and I don't know. I can keep talking on and on about this, and I know I'm going off track a little bit, but at the end of the day, Jonathan, you look at it, it's just, I think, respect, you know, and like for this not to happen on national TV again, it was kind of embarrassing too for, you know, not just the WWE, but for pro wrestling in general, to where you have to come out with a mutual agreement. Like, you have to know what's going in. You can't be, you know, I'm too good for this. I'm not losing here. I'm going to lose there. It just, you know, just stop. Like, everybody's got to meet halfway, and you do the right thing. That's pretty much it.
Well, I think that what's crazy about it is as we go back and look at some, you know, the days, weeks, months, years after the Montreal Screwjob, some of the things that you see that happen from this are the rise of the Mr. McMahon character. Basically, the next night on Raw, he came out and he had the, you know, he had the black eye, which we'll get into in a little bit. And they had the setup with JR, and that's when he uttered his famous "Vince didn't screw Brett, Brett screwed Brett." But that really was kind of the takeoff from the, you know, the rumblings of that, the Attitude Era, really. And, you know, Brett went to WCW, but they held him back at WCW. He didn't come on for like a month afterwards, which why Eric Bischoff didn't bring him up right away to capitalize on that, I don't really remember what the reasoning was. But, you know, Shawn and Vince, they went on to have just ridiculous careers. And I would even say that a lot of the mistrust of Shawn Michaels in the locker room really pushed for DX to be formed, because Shawn's best friend in the business, everybody had left to go to WCW except Triple H. So Triple H and Shawn Michaels are now best buds, and they're going to spend all their time together. And the rest of the locker room probably doesn't really trust them, and, you know, obviously for obvious reasons. So I would say that one of the most important things that came out of all of this is the fact that, you know, DX spawned from this. You know, the Monday Night Wars took a turn, and Vince McMahon became probably one of the most hated, at this point, I would say, characters in the world of wrestling. So,
yeah, and Jonathan, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, and I don't want to go back into it. I don't want to, you know, rehash it again. But, you know, it's just that thing of, what happens if Michaels didn't do it? Like, what would have happened? You know, like, what history would have changed because of it? You know what I mean? So it's kind of like I said, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, if you watch Heroes, you can't step on butterflies when you go back. Like, time travel, Marty McFly. You know, you can't, you know, there's too many things you don't want to mess up. Like, what could change the whole outcome? And, you know, it's interesting, man. It would have been a totally different wrestling world if, you know, they would have just, Brett would have won. You know what I mean? Like, who'd have known? It's just amazing just to think about that. If it happened, like, yay, Brett won. Trust me, I would have loved it. But at the same time, it's like, wow, a lot of things wouldn't probably have happened. I don't know.
Well, what's cool, too, is that we have, you know, like, a lot of people were there when Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address, but we don't have film, you know, from it. We don't have, you know, we even do have film from, you know, the JFK assassination, but we still don't know what happened. But with this, it just so happened that Bret Hart was actually having a documentary about his career and life being filmed. And it's called Wrestling with Shadows, and it was on A&E, I know, and I have it on DVD. I'm sure a lot of people will have it out there, but this is like a historical record of the goings on of that night. And it's not just what happened leading up to the match and the match, but, you know, Brett went backstage and Brett was none too pleased with the outcome of that match. And, you know, obviously I know you'll talk in, you know, a different, you'll probably come from a different angle, but Brett actually gave Vince that black eye that I was talking about. Vince said, you know, do what you got to do, and he gave him an open shot, and Brett actually punched Vince in the face. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, what do you remember most about that documentary?
No, like, just because it was definitely that, you know, like that the Oz pulling of the curtain, you know, back, you know, to where, okay, we kind of saw what happened live on, you know, on the Survivor Series, but this was like, you know, right place, right time. You couldn't have asked for anything better, like a documentary on Bret Hart while this is happening. It's just too good to be true. And, you know, it was cool. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, you got to see something you never saw before. You know what I mean? The backstage stuff, the talking to where, you know, it was like it was ahead of its time, man. It was totally ahead of its time. As far as, you know, like the stuff you see on now, the WWE Network, like Breaking Ground or, you know, the documentary stuff like that to where, oh, we get it now. But this is 1997, you know what I mean? This is like,
it was the Blair Witch Project of wrestling documentaries, because it really came out of nowhere. No one was like, what is it, Wrestling with Shadows? And then it was like, holy crap, like this thing. This is it. Like, it's showing, you know, it's showing people backstage that are like mingling. It's showing families. It's showing, you know, like Brett throwing a fit, and it really was an amazing thing. And in a business that was already starting to have people question, you know, the validity of it, with, you know, the day that kayfabe died or whatever you want to talk about, when Iron Sheik and Hacksaw rode together and got busted or whatever. But there wasn't much left after that day. I think that if you have not seen Wrestling with Shadows, I highly recommend picking it up. So
yeah, and that's the thing too, is like, if you watch it today, I think we're so conditioned to seeing all this reality television that it's like, it's not as big of a deal. Of like, if you think about it, this is 1997. And, you know, if this screw job didn't happen, it would have, you know, I don't think this documentary would have been that, you know, it was good, but that totally just added the fuel to the fire and made it stand out above and beyond anything else they did. So it wasn't even the fun part was that it wasn't a WWE documentary. Yeah. So it was totally outsider looking in. So that made it even better. But
listen, it was 1997. Lots of stuff was going on. It was the age of boy bands. You know, Hanson was probably getting ready to ramp it up. I think we had probably Sprite Clear. Pepsi Clear, or I don't know what it was, but something was clear. And it try to watch it and try to think of yourself like we were impressionable youth at that time. We were still, you know, like teens or younger, and I was in seventh grade, so that should tell you something right there. But no, it was awesome. But Steve, why are we still talking about this nearly 20 years after it's happened? You know, there's a DVD about it. They've done several DVDs actually about it. Some WWE produced, some not. Wrestlers still talk about it. It's brought up on WWE website. It is the most probably infamous topic of wrestling history in the past, I would say, 30, 40 years.
Yeah. It's been crazy, man. It's like you know when Hogan slammed Andre. It's like one of those moments where time's just totally we're gonna change from here on out. You know, it's not like the crowning of a new champion or changing of a guard kind of aspect, but you know, because Shawn Michaels already beat him for the championship a year ago, so it's like it wasn't anything crazy. But it was just like that moment in time where that error just died. This, you know, it just, things got real, and it was like a whole new, you know, time happened after that. It was, you know what I mean? It was like the end of an era, the beginning of a new decade kind of a thing. And it's just one of those monumental things that happened. You know, it's not just any other day. It was like the first time you saw some real emotion from two wrestlers and the owner in the ring live on TV. You know, it was so impactful. It was as impactful as Undertaker throwing Mankind off the Hell in a Cell. You know what I mean? Like, you saw that, and it's like, that's exactly how this was, this ending, because it's something you don't see every day. And I don't think we really have seen it since, so.
Well, I would love to sit here and talk about it. I think we could talk about it for 5, 6, 7 hour shows, whatever you want to talk about it. But, right now, we are going to go back and talk to Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Now, you know, there's also talk about you having your own comic book. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, so that one is being done right now, and that's with Lion Forge Comics, and that's called The Warrior's Creed. It's basically a story of the Guerreros and kind of, you know, embellished a little bit, but how we have kind of kept being wrestlers and have these kind of little superpowers, and we've protected this city in Mexico from this mafia syndicate, and it's kind of how it's just pretty cool. It's just great spin, and it's written by the same person who wrote who wrote Deadpool. We actually make a movie about it right now. It's Fabian Nicieza. And he's like the number, you know, top five writer. He wrote my story. And then Eddie Nunez, who's a top 10 graphic artist, you know, comic book artist. He did the artistry on it, so it's really cool. Lion Forge invested a lot of money into it, and I've read about eight books already, and it's really compelling. I love it.
Awesome. Now, do you yourself have any favorite comic books out there?
Yeah, I'm old school, man. I'm a you know, Spider-Man, Marvel kind of guy, you know, so I love those Hulk and Superman, that kind of stuff, you know. Although there are a lot of great new ones out there, man, I'm just an old school guy for sure.
All right. Now, we talked about it earlier, but there's no getting around it. You are a member of the world famous Guerrero family. We've had Ted DiBiase on here. We've had other wrestlers that come from famous wrestling families. So where do you personally rank the Guerreros against all those other wrestling families?
Well, you know, I'm biased, of course, but, God, you know, not taking away from any other wrestling family out there, because we're all brothers in this business. You know, mm-hmm. We've all been up and down the road together and, you know, blood, sweat and tears together for sure. But I think our family, we're really the only ones that we've made it everywhere we've gone, whether it be Mexico, we've, you know, conquered Mexico, the U.S., Japan, Europe, everywhere we've gone, we've kind of, we've survived, and basically, I would say this, we've been small brown guys in a big white guy's world, you know, we're the only ones, I think, that can have great matches with anybody. We can brawl with you. We can wrestle with you. We can fly with you. We can we can kind of do it all in the wrestling world, you know, for sure. And that's I think that's something different than you know, a lot of other families that where they're very good at one or two things, when we're kind of very good at all things. And again, not taking away from any of them, because you know, just being in this business for any amount of time is a feat.
Sure. You know, being from such a storied family and wrestling legacy, do you think being in the business was easier or harder for you?
Both, man. Both, to be honest. You know, we got the doors open for us easier, but as soon as you stepped through that door, there was no learning process. You really had to be good right off the bat, because they're comparing you to your elders. You know, right off the bat, it wasn't like the first time you saw Shawn Michaels, for instance. You know, where he was your son, Shawn Michaels. He was like him or hate him. He was always good and always a talented athlete. He got very, very good as he got older, you know. But us, as we came in, we were expected to be good right off the bat. There was no learning process, you know. So
sure.
This business, if you know anything about this business, it really takes many, many years to master it. And you're constantly learning and constantly changing. Even now, 20 years in, I'm still constantly changing.
Now, this is this week marks the 18th anniversary of the infamous Montreal Screwjob. That was all the way back in 1997. What do you remember about that moment of wrestling history?
I remember that it really shocked the wrestling world. You know, we were like, wow, Brett really got screwed. Wow, you know, it's crazy. You know, so just, you know, now being older, I see both sides of it. I see Brett's side. I see Vince's side of it, you know. You know, Vince is trying to protect the company, and Brett's protecting himself. You know, I get it. I totally get it. So that's just a tough one, man. But I remember really when it happened, and we were just like, as a wrestler, we're all going to band against the promoters, you know what I mean, for sure, and stick together, or at least, you know, on paper, stick together. And, you know, it was something that we were just like, gosh, we couldn't believe that it rocked the wrestling world. We really did.
Sure. All right. Now, Chavo, we come to the part of our show we call the lightning round. We have some fun questions. You know, for feel free to give the best response you want, a short answer or whatnot. And there's a few of those. We'll get into it, okay?
Great.
All right. So who do you consider the most famous Mexican wrestler of all time?
That's tough. I'd have to say either Eddie Guerrero or Rey Mysterio or Emil Máscaras.
Okay. All
that's
right.
Tough.
Now,
yeah.
Now, have you ever heard of the band The Mountain Goats?
Absolutely.
Okay. So they obviously have some several songs about your father, Chavo. Classic. Did they come talk to you about this, or did they? I mean, because they're obviously big fans. I just didn't know what they'd if you'd ever talked to wrestling with them.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, when they came out with the song "Legend of Chavo Guerrero," which is about my father, which mentions me a little bit in it, you know, I contacted them on Twitter and we became friends. And they explained to me that they used to go watch wrestling at the Olympic Auditorium, and my dad was their hero. So I was like, man, mine too. He's my hero too. So and that's basically where that came from. You know, from all these years ago, they still made an impact. My dad just made an impact on them. They wrote a song about them.
All right. Now, to go a little political, what are your thoughts on the possibility of having Donald Trump as the president of the United States?
Comical, to be honest. That's very, very comical. I've never seen anybody as racist as him and get away with it. So in the WWE, you got rid of Hulk Hogan for a racist comment, but yet Donald Trump is still in your Hall of Fame, and he's just saying all racist comments for sure, you know. And I get what they're saying. People don't really care if you're here legally or illegally, as long as you pay your taxes. And that's basically what it boils down to. This country was founded on immigration. Every one of us, unless you're a Native American, every one of us origins came from a different land, period. Mm-hmm. And it was all illegal.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're paying their taxes and they figure out a way to get them to pay taxes, well, then there you go. That's what it's all about. It all comes down to money.
All right.
Now, we mentioned you have your own talk show, the Chavo Guerrero Show. Who would your dream guest be for that show?
My dream guest, you know, would be somebody who, that's a good one. It has to be somebody like, you know, famous actor or athlete that I like to go have a beer with afterwards and, you know, just hang out with. And maybe I have to say Charlie Sheen.
Okay.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Right,
would be awesome. I think I'd go to parties that need.
Perfect. Now, are there any free agents out there that you would love to see in Lucha Underground?
Free agents. Yeah, you know, we have a little bit of a different style because we definitely have to do the Lucha style, you know, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some free agents out there that would we'd like to see, you know, Austin Aries and AJ Styles. It's funny right now because right now is a very good to be an independent wrestler in the wrestling world. When 3 or 4 years ago, it wasn't. You know, a lot of these guys that we have in the underground tried out for the WWE and they turned them all down. And now WWE is really, it's like everybody's scouting everywhere. We're scouting PWG shows. We're scouting Mexico. We're scouting Japan for these, you know, great indie wrestlers that have been around the world kind of and just have never had that big shot, you know. And right now is a great time for indie wrestling.
Absolutely. Now, we know you're busy, so this is going to be like the end of our lightning round, but let's just say that there's a situation out there. What would you do? Would you A, lie, B, cheat, C, steal, or D, all of the above?
I would cheat to steal and then lie about it. So your answer would be D, all of the above.
Perfect. Well, Chavo Guerrero Jr., we thank you so much for your time. Where can the fans keep up with you? Keep up with you these days? You know, the world is full of social media pretty much. Where can the fans follow you?
Follow me on Twitter at NextWarrior. Follow me on Instagram at Chavo Guerrero Jr. And on Facebook, I'm Real Chavo Guerrero Jr. And if you log on the 16th, starting the 16th, to VivaBLR.com, you will be able to order T-shirts and hats from GLR, and we're offering them at a 21-day flash sale for $21, and they include shipping. So a T-shirt or a hat for $21 is shipped to your house, and after the 21 days, we will discontinue these actual designs and never have them again.
Awesome.
So basically, it's kind of like just for our hardcore fans.
Definitely. Well, I know me and Jonathan will be all over that. Chavo, thank you so much for joining us today. I know we barely scraped the surface with you today, and we would love to have you on a future show down the line. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks a lot. God bless you guys, and viva la raza.
All right, and if you're listening to our show, check out all of our friends on these other great shows.
That's right, Steve. We have our friends over at PWPNation.com.
That's right. Be sure to check out exclusive articles, wrestling news, and other wrestling podcasts such as AWP. Also, be sure and stop on over to Main Event Marks on Facebook.com/Main Event Marks. You can check them out every Thursday at 9 p.m. hosted by Angry Cooter, where, you know, fans talk wrestling live on a webcam. So be sure you check them out every Thursday at 9 p.m.
And if you still have a hankering, yes, a hankering for more wrestling and just general debauchery, I suggest going over to The Joe Cronin Show. You can check him out on youtube.com/Joe Cronin Show.
Well, that's the show. We want to thank each and every one of you for listening today.
Every week we do this show free of charge for you, the fans.
If you're wondering, how can I repay these guys? Well, we have just one thing.
Subscribe to us on iTunes.
While you're there, be sure to rate us and give us a good review. Huh?
So that's more than one thing, but if you're looking for more information about AWP, then head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com.
We are all over social media, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and more.
Gosh, we've got a lot going on, but if you are an AWP super fan, you can also show your support by going over to ProWrestlingTees.com and buying one of our official AWP shirts.
We couldn't do this show without each and every one of you, so tune in next week for
another wrestling podcast.